holding on Pezayin Amud Aleph towards the bottom. Yesterday we learned the Mishnah talked about the idea that a Bas Kohen can become posel, that becomes posel, meaning truma, one when she has a child from Israel, and as long as that child is alive. On the other hand, we said that Bas Israel, who was married to a Kohen and now is pregnant with his child, can eat truma until the child is born. And we discussed that idea that it's different than the Dinim of Yibum, where we say that whether a child from her husband is alive or not, then nevertheless she's pasuk from Yibum. So the last thing we said was that we have the pasuk saying kinureh, that the pasuk says that the bas kohen can only go back to eating truma if she's like when she was younger, meaning now she's pregnant. And that's what we're holding. Four lines from the bottom, Pezayin Amud Aleph. So in fact, the pasuk had to tell us both, had to use both expressions, the expression kinureha, the expression kinureha, from which we learn that a pregnant woman cannot eat, that when she's pregnant with a Yisrael's child, she can't eat truma, and conversely, if a Yisrael is pregnant with a Kohen's child, also can't eat truma. And the pasuk also had to say the expression that she has no children. We need both. The ikas rachmana bezera emla, because if the Torah had only written the expression that she has no children, you would say, you know what the difference is. You know why when she has children she can't eat truma. When she has children from the Yisrael she can't eat truma because she's different than before. Because when she lived at home before she was married she was one body. Now there's two. There's herself and her child. But you would think, but if she's pregnant, she was one body before, she's one body now because she's carrying the child, you would think maybe therefore she'd be allowed to eat truma. This Bas Kohen, who's pregnant. This Bas Kohen, who was married to Yisrael, and now her husband is dead, and she's pregnant with his child. Originally, when she lived at home, she was one person. Now she's also one person. Over Yerachimahu. You would think she'd be allowed to. So therefore you need the pasuk kinureha, that at this point she's not kinureha, she's not like she was when she was younger because now she's pregnant, and therefore she can't. Conversely, if the Torah had only written that she's not allowed to eat when she's pregnant from the Yisrael, you would say the difference is because her body has changed. When she lived at home, she was not pregnant, her womb was empty, and now she's full, now she's pregnant.
Tzricha
means riyah. Aval zera ema, but in the case of children, you would argue then that if the child's already been born, if she has a child from Israel, fine. Originally, she was an issue; her womb was empty. Now it's also empty. Ema loy. So you might have thought that not. Maybe she's still allowed to eat truma on that basis. Tzricha. So therefore, you need both. Now we said that there's a certain difference in this regard between the dinim of yibum and the dinim of truma. So now the Gemara is going to explore in a few different possible ways why indeed don't we learn one from the other. The first is siman omer leilai nasa maseh b'misa nasa v'loy nasa b'vlad yavam v'truma yibum v'truma siman. It's a siman for four different arguments that the Gemara is going to use to argue this point. That maybe we should draw a comparison between, maybe we should make a limud from Yibum to Truma, or from Yibum from Truma to Yibum, and say that the same rules should apply. Omelet of Yehuda midi eskautele rava, loy nasa kemesim kachayim in Yibum mekavachomer. We said yesterday that if the woman had a child from her husband, and then her husband died, and then the child died. We said, even though the child's now dead, since he was alive at the time when her husband died, then she passed it from Yibum thereafter. Maybe we shouldn't say that. Maybe we should say, once the child dies, she becomes Chayiv in Yibum. And we Kavah Chomer. We would say this based on a Kavah Chomer. When it comes to Truma, we say that her child from her first husband and from her second husband are both on an equal level. And they both pass on from Truma. So we said, for example, that Bas Yisrael, Bas Kohen, rather, who we said who was married to Yisrael and has a child from him, we say she's passed from Truma. Later on, if she has a child from a Kohen, rather, we say that she's still able to eat Truma on the basis of the child. But then later on, she has a child with Yisrael, she's passed. So we see that the children are on an equal level. And La'asa Mason Kachayim, and we see that dead children are not like living ones, because once a child from Yisrael dies, she's allowed to eat Terumah. So, Malkam Shalayasa, Vlad Menarishan, Vlad Menasheni, Leprochim Menayibum. So when it comes to a child from the first husband, is not like a child from the second husband, in the sense of Paturing her from Yibum, meaning, again, if she was married twice and she had children with her first husband and not with her second, then she has to do Chalit Yil Yibum on the basis of her second husband, because she was married to her second husband and he had no children. How much more so that we should say that if the child dies, then it's not considered as if he was still alive and she should be chayiv in Yibum? The answer is no. You can't say that because Talmud Leimer, because the Pasuk says, all the Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness and all its paths are peace. Which means, what does that mean? It means that if you have this woman, she had a child when her husband died. At that point, she's not chayiv in Yibum because she has a child. At that point, she goes and marries somebody else, which she's perfectly allowed to do. If now we're going to say, when this child dies, that she needs that she needs chalitza, then that's going to create a problem in her marriage. It actually says tisgana albaila, misgana albaila. She's going to be repulsive to her husband, and her husband is going to think, like, why did I bother marrying her if she still has to do chalitza with somebody? Now, like, she still has a connection to somebody else. So it's not fair to say that, to make that she went and married perfectly behetar because she had a child, and now all of a sudden you're gonna make tisgana albaila. You can't do that. Other mafarshim say it's not even a matter of tisgana albaila. I think the Ritva argues that if we would say that all of a sudden now she has a zika, then in order to do chalitza with her yavam, she would actually have to divorce her husband. She can't do chalitza while she's married because she's not subject to yibum at that point because she's already a married woman. So she'd have to divorce him. Okay, maybe she could remarry him afterwards, but still, it's interfering with their marriage in a way that's inappropriate.
The reason we know she doesn't...
That's what we're saying. We can't use this Kal V'Chomer from Terumah to argue that she should, because that would be a violation of Derech HaDachanayim.
We don't have a
pasuk. We don't have a pasuk, but we do, because the pasuk is V'Zera Eimor. What's the lashon over there? So when he died, he had a child. We would just argue. So we know on that basis already. She's potter from Yibum at that time. The fact that we don't make her chayav and Yibum afterwards is based on this limit.
But it's just a svara.
It's a svara, yeah.
It's such an important
thing. Okay, but nevertheless, once she was potter, yeah. Next, how about the other way around? Why don't we say the other way around, that a dead child should still be considered as if he's living as far as Terumah? Meaning this Bas Koyan who had a child from a Yisrael, we say as long as the child's alive, she can't eat Terumah. We say that when the child dies, she's allowed to eat Terumah. Why? We should say that maybe not.
Right.
We should make the opposite Kavah Chaymer. We see that a child from one marriage versus another, they have no relation as far as Yibum, and yet also Mason Kachayim, and we say that the child, even after he or she dies, still is considered as if he's alive, and his mother is potter from Yibum, as we just said. So here, when it comes to Terumah, where we say that she's possible based on whether it's her child from her first or her second marriage, as long as it's a child from not a Kohen, and apostles are from Terumah, how much more so then we should say the same logic as by Yibum and say that when the child's dead, it's still considered as if he's alive and his mother is possible from Terumah. And Talmud Leimer v'Zera Ein Lo, because the pasuk says she has no children. Nu v'ha Ein Lo. Right now, she has no children. So the fact that at one time she had children doesn't make a difference as far as now. Third possibility, the nas of Vlad Menarish and Kavlad Menasheni within Yibum Kavachomer. Why don't we say when it comes to Yibum that yes, whatever marriage she has children from is counted. So meaning if she was first married to Moshe and she had children from him, later on she marries Yossel and she doesn't have children from him. You were saying all this time she's chayiv in Yibum because of her marriage to Yossel. Why? Say she had children from Moshe. That should be considered that she had children. That's good enough. Just like we do by Terumah. In Terumah, we just established that by Terumah, a dead is not the same as alive. When the child is dead, then she's allowed to eat Terumah. When he's alive, she's not. And yet, also Vlad Menarishan to Vlad Menasheni, and yet we say that whatever marriage she had children from, it still counts and passes her from Terumah. Makam Sha'asa Mesim Kachayim, and in Yibum, so when it comes to Yibum, where we say that dead and alive is the same thing, she's potter from Yibum once she has, as long as she had children at the time of her husband's death. In addition, Asa V'lad Menorishim to V'lad Menasheni, how much more so we should say that even if she only had children from her first marriage, it should still potter her from Yibum, from Yibum after her marriage with her second husband. No, Talmud Loimer, Uvein Ein Loi, V'ha Ein Loi. Yes, but the Pasuk says, by Yibum, the Pasuk says he has no children, and he doesn't have any children. Yes, she has children, but he doesn't. So it's different than the previous case where we said Vizera Einlo, where right now she has no children. He was saying Vain Einlo means that means he had no children at all. And the fourth one, V'lainasa V'lad Menashin K'Vlad Menashin L'Trum L'Kavachayim. How about the other way around? Let's say that it's not the same whether she has a child from her first or her second marriage when it comes to Truma, again, based on her Kavachayim. If we're saying that dead and alive, the child still passes her from Yibum, and like also Vlad Menorishin Ki Vlad Menasheni, but yet we do not say if she did not have children from her second marriage, we still say she's subject to Yibum or Chalitza, even though she had children from her first marriage. So Malkam Shaloi also makes him Kachayim Lein and Truma, so where we do not make dead and alive the same thing, namely by Truma, where we say once the child dies, she's allowed to eat Truma. Ain't a din shalinasa Vlad Menorishin to Vlad Menasheni. How much more so then that we should argue that a child from the first marriage is not the same as a child from the second marriage. We should, in other words, ignore the child from the previous marriage and see what she had from her second marriage. No, Talmud Leimer, Ein La, V'ha Yesh La. No, but the Pasuk says that the Zera Ein La, and the fact that she does have children. So all four of these possibilities we slug up based on three of them based on Sukkim and one of them based on a Svara. So the bottom line is there is going to be that difference. The bottom line is there are both of these differences. When it comes to Truma, we say that it doesn't matter what marriage her children are from, as long as they're not from a Kohen, then it makes her Pasul. Unlike with Yibum, where we say that it matters what marriage she had children from. Conversely, though, by Yibum, we say it doesn't matter whether right now her children are alive or dead. Whereas by Truma, we're saying it does matter. Hadron Alach Yesh Mutarim. You look at Mishnah and the first blot or so of Gemara with Nachman the other day, so I'm gonna skip it just to recap. We'll continue with the two dots on Pekas and Beis. And to recap quickly, the Mishnah had talked about cases where a woman was told that her husband died. Either we said the Mishnah had talked about two possible cases. One was that one aide came and said it, and Beis Din accepted that. The other is that two aidim came. And we said in the case of the one aide, where if afterwards her husband shows up, we say we punish her in various ways. We make her lose her ksuba and all the different shnoi ksuba and whatever, the children are mamzerim, etc., because she should have been more careful. She should have checked out the situation more carefully before relying on one aide. As opposed to, we said, if it was two aidim, then we said there's more leniency to two aidim you always believe. And then we had a machlokes tanoim on the various details, what penalties we apply and don't apply in these various cases. And then the Gemara had talked about the whole business of one aid versus two aidim, where we see that in that material we accept one aid, etc. So let's continue on Peches and Beis. The two dots, six, seven lines from the bottom. The Mishnah said, Tzricha get mizeh mizeh. But in this case, the woman, again, one aide had come and said that her husband died. She remarried. Now her first husband shows up. So we say she needs a get from both of them. So, this is my mission to buy get. I understand why she needs a get from her first husband. She was Mizana. She was Mizana, and she's also to him now. And that's the thing. Unlike in the case where it was two aidim, we would say we would consider it a matter of oinus, and she might remain mutter to her first husband. Here it's less of a matter of oinus because we said normally isha daiko mitzvah, a woman is supposed to check things out carefully before she remarries. She didn't, and therefore we penalize her. Elamisheni, am I? That's what we said. The children. Elamisheni, but we're saying she needs a get from her second husband as well. Am I? Nusbalmahu. Why? She was never legally married to him because all this time she was an Ashes Ish to her first husband. So why should she need a get from her second husband? Effectively, it's as if she had gone and been Mizana with him. You don't need a get for that. You're right, but you have to make a Gzera because people might think that the first husband had actually divorced her, or they might confuse it with a case where the first husband divorces her, the Nasa Zeh, and the second husband marries her, and they're going to see that she's ending the marriage without getting a get. People are going to think that an Eshetish can be divorced without a get. Question is, Yehochi Sefer Dukatani. Okay, if you're going to say that, what about the next part of the Mishnah, meaning not our Mishnah, but later on in the Perek, on Tzadik Beis, when the Mishnah talks about similar cases, the Mishnah talks over there about a case. What happened? Our Mishnah was talking about where she actually married. She actually went into the chuppah The next Mishnah talks about a case where she was only miskadish to somebody else. So then there's much less of a reason to penalize her. She didn't actually do anything wrong yet. And we say, she's an arusa, right. But she's not really an arusa because her first husband shows up and it turns out she was an eshetish. But yeah. So Amr Lo Meis Bailech, so people tell her your husband died, v'niskadcha, and she was miskadish to somebody else. She didn't actually go through with the marriage yet. And her husband shows up. Then we say she's allowed to return to her husband, meaning she doesn't need a get from. Meaning it sounds like she doesn't need a get from the second husband. Now why not? Hasam Nami, name a Girish Zev or Kiddush Zev. People are going to think the same thing. Her first husband divorced her. She was miskadish to the second man. And people are going to think that an Eshetish can leave her married without a get. So what's the difference? The answer is Lo'olam Oya Get. No, as a matter of fact, in that second case, you will say she needs a get. When we say she's mutter to return to her first husband because she wasn't a zana, when we say she's mutter to return to her first husband, it means we still are going to tell the second so-called husband, give her a get, so that people don't make this mistake. But then you're allowed to return to your first husband because you were never mizana while married to him.
We don't apply the rule of she's not allowed to return to her first
husband. Ah, so that's the question. Yehochi nimta the machzor gurushasim mishnas arsa. Aren't you going to have the problem that people are going to think that? Again, people are going to think the first husband divorced her, then she was miskadish to somebody else, and now the first husband is remarrying her, and we know that's also not allowed. The answer is that's not a problem. Kid Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur, because that next Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur. We learned way back in the first Perek that we had a whole analysis of this pasuk over there that the first husband is not allowed to remarry her after she was married to somebody else. We had a whole discussion whether this applies only if she was Nesua to somebody else, or even if she was only Miskadish. And we had Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur who said it only applies if she's Nesua. So good, if she's Miskadish, she is allowed to return to her first husband. So fine, the second husband can give her a get, even though he doesn't really need it. We can tell him to give her a get because people are going to think. But then she goes back to her first husband. No problem what people will think. So the thing is mutter.
We're not afraid that people will say, no, she's still going to let her.
According to Rabbi Yosi ben Kippur, she's allowed to. Again, according to the Chamim, no. But we're saying, according to that. Okay, the question is, how much katani safer after preaching nosan la achron get le possible mina kohuna? Yeah, but how does that help though? The next Mishnah says that even though the second husband gave her a get le possible mina kohuna, meaning the second one, the one who did kedushin with her, we say he gives her a get. He does not possible her from kohuna because she's not considered a divorcee because there was no divorce. She was never married to him. There was never a valid kedushin. The question is, the cloud will I buy a get? That itself seems to imply that she did not really need that get. Do you buy a get? Because if the Chachamim were to say that she needs a get, am I like possible in a kohuna, then why indeed would it not possible from kohuna? We learned in a previous parak, and we're going to have later on in this parak, that there's a concept called the reyach haget, literally means the smell of a get. We had it back in the Samach. That you can have a case where a woman does not really, and the nuns actually, we had it, we have cases where a woman does not need to be divorced midaraisa, but she does need, a get has a certain effect midrabanan. There's a case where a get has a certain effect midrabanan, and it's called reyach haget, and it's enough to pass all over from kohuna, because you don't want people thinking that a woman who got a get can marry a kohen. Right. So Mela, if we were to say the first husband doesn't have to give her a get, then we say if he chooses to give her a get, doesn't pass her, fine, because that's the equivalent of me going and giving a woman off the street a get. Obviously, it doesn't pass her. But if we're saying that Abonani has to give her a get so that people don't think that she's going back to, so that people don't think she's leaving a marriage or leaving a kedushin without a get, then you have the problem of Reach a get. Why is the Mishnah saying she's not possible Kohuna on that basis? Ella, so no. The reason is different. Not having, not to do with whether it was kedushin versus nisuin. The reason is Shitaka does not need a get in the second case. Sefer Amri kedusha Torah Savu, because in the sefer, when it comes to kedushin, Shitaka won't need a get. People are going to think that a woman can leave a marriage without a get. No, people are going to realize kedusha Torah Savu. People are going to think it was a kedushin under mistaken premises. Rashi gives an example. You can have a case. We know there's a whole bunch of cases. The Gemara lists them in Kedushin, where, for example, a person is Mekadosh, a woman. Let's say I'm being Mekadosh you on condition that and she says I'm accepting the Kedushin on condition that I'm a Kohen, and it turns out he's not a Kohen. Then the Kedushin never took effect. Similarly, there's many other cases. There's the famous one over there. Amanas Shani Tzadik. Then the Kedushin of Chal Misopik, because he might have had a Hirut Tshuva. Even though he remains in Russia. So the point is, people can realize there's such a thing as kedusha tos. On the other hand, there's no such thing as nisui tos. There's no such thing you marry a woman and actually do the chuppah and do bia all under mistaken premises. Nisui. So kedushin, yeah. The question is, reisha namri ami nisui tos havu. Why don't we say the same thing as far as the nisuin? Now, the question is, Tosfos asks on that, what do I mean? You just said, the Gemara explains later, that there's a difference between Kedushin and Nisuin. Kedushin you can say Abba Tos, Nisuin not. So Tosfos has a different explanation. When we say Kedushi Tos, we don't mean like Rashi is saying that people are going to think, yes, there are other cases in the world of Kedushi Tos. It means people are going to realize, you know why she was Niskadesh to this other guy? Because she thought her husband is dead. Now it turns out her husband is alive, so now we realize the Kedushin never took effect. As opposed to Nisuin, people are less likely to say that. People are less likely to say it, but you might still argue the same thing. In the case of our Mishnah, you're saying that she's miscavish to the second guy and then she leaves him without a get. People are going to realize that she was only miscavish because she thought her husband is dead. Turns out he wasn't dead, so therefore the condition with no effect. Well, by the same token, even if she marries him with hope of a kedushin, people should realize afterwards, the sui Torah Savu, that it was all based on a mistake. So again, she shouldn't need a get from him. Why should she need a get? Why is our Mishnah saying she needs a get from him? The reason is Kansur Rabbanan, because in our Mishnah, it's true, technically she should not need a get from the second husband, but the Rabbanan penalized her, and therefore she does. That she did wrong what you just said. Isha Daiko Minsma. She should have checked out the situation more carefully and not just run and relied on the 1A. The question is Sefer Nami with Nisura. So in that case, in the Sefer also, they should penalize her. The difference is Reisha to Abdi Isura Kansura, because in our Mishnah, she actually did an Isur. She went and married and had relations with somebody else without thoroughly checking that her husband is dead. Sefer Deloy Abdi Isura, and the Sefer she didn't do an Isur. She accepted Kedushin, fine, but she didn't actually do a Maisa Isur yet. Therefore, like Kansura Rabbanan, so therefore the Rabbanan didn't penalize her and didn't enforce her to accept a get from the second husband.
They warn her in any way?
I mean, the Mishnah is talking about that one aid came and based it on that basis was matter her. But we're still saying he should take Omintzva. She should have said very nice. The based in accepted the one aid, but I'm not considering that good enough until I have more solid evidence. As opposed to when two aid didn't come, then we said that's more of an onus. Then the Mishnah had said, so the Mishnah had started listing the consequences for this woman. We said aim laksuba, that she does not get a ksuba from either husband. My time, why not? Because my time at the kin of the Rabbanan Ksuba, because what's the whole reason that Rabbanan made the Takano Ksuba in the first place? Because you don't want that the husband should be too quick to divorce his wife. He should know there's a substantial financial penalty involved. Whereas in our case over here, you want it to be easier for him to divorce her. She's also to be married to either of them. So by all means, take away her Ksuba, and that way, and let him divorce her. Next, the Mishnah had said, "Ein la peiros v'la mezonos v'la blois." She's not entitled to reimbursement of the peiros that either husband ate. of her nechassim, or mezonis, we said that she's not entitled to support from either of them, and we said similar to the previous peret, we said mezonis over here also doesn't just mean when they're married, because we said in that case, of course, if they're married, then Beis Din is forcing them to separate, of course there's no mezonis. We're talking about, again, the case where her husband left on a trip, and she borrowed money from somebody else, she's not entitled to reimbursement from either husband. V'loy b'loy, since she's not entitled to the worn out garments, or the value of them. Again, because why not? Because tnoi ksuba ksuba dami. All these things are tnoiim of the ksuba. All these things the husband is usually entitled to pay this, and the husband is required to support his wife and to give her the blight. All of those are details of the whole takana of ksuba. And in that case, ksuba dami, they like the ksuba. So if she loses the ksuba, then she loses these things as well. Then the Mishnah said not for mizeh or mizeh, that if she takes if she takes mizonis from either one, from either one of the husbands, then we say that we make her give it back to them. What was the expression in the Mishnah? Not for mizeh or mizeh tachzeh. Yeah, that if she took mizonis from either one of them, then she's made to return it. Question is pshita. Of course, if she's not entitled to these mizonis, then even if she took them, how does that help her? The answer is Maudi Tema, because you might have thought Kim is a tough Salim up Kimina. You might have argued true, you may not give it to her in the first place, but once she already has it in her possession, maybe we should say we don't take it away from her. Maybe, well, one thing, because she's already muchzik in it. And in fact, actually, some Mephoshim point out, she might have had an argument of a migui. She might be able to argue, instead of saying I took it as Mazonis, she might say that I have rights to this on other grounds. Such as, for example, that it was my property to begin with. Nevertheless, Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush, that we don't say that. Then we said Avlad Mamzer. We said that the child from either husband is a Mamzer. Meaning, when we say, obviously, from the second husband, and from the first, meaning from the first, if she goes back to him after while she was married to the second husband, before she got the get from him, then the child from the first, then any child she has with the first husband is going to be a Mamzer. Now that's what the Gemara is going to take up now, because on the face of it, what does it mean? A child from the second husband is a mamzer. Fine, that's easy enough to understand. That's a mamzer daraisa. The second one, if she has a child from the first husband, though, while she's still supposedly married to the second one, remember, she wasn't married to him at all. She's really still married to her first husband. If we're saying that her child from her first husband is considered a mamzer, then that's only a mamzer midrabanan. How do the rabbanon have the right to declare somebody a mamzer? That's what we're going to discuss over here. So first, the Gemara is going to go off onto a side topic.
Still married to the other one.
Right. That's the Gemara is going to go off onto a side topic, which eventually is going to get us back to that. Tanan Hassam, we learn in a Mishnah in Trumas, in Tomei Min HaTomei Al HaTahor, you're not allowed to take Truma from Tomei produce on Tahor. So if you have a whole bunch of Tahor produce, you're not allowed to take some Tomei produce of the same type and declare it Truma on behalf of the Tahor. If you did that, then it depends. B'shoigig truma se truma. If you did it b'shoigig, then the truma is still considered truma. It'll be truma tmei. You'll give it to the kohen and he can use it for firewood or whatever. But you have accomplished giving truma. B'mezid loyasav loyklum. But if you did it b'mezid, then you didn't accomplish anything. Now what do we mean? My loyasav loyklum. That's machlokes. Amar Rav Chisda. Loyasav loyklum kol ikir. It means that we completely ignore whatever he did. In the sense, da afilu ahi griva hadolativli. Even that one sa'ah, a griva is another word for a sa'ah. Even that one sa'ah, which he declared truma, actually goes back to being tevel. We don't say, in other words, because he designated that sa'ah as truma, therefore we're going to consider it truma. We're going to consider it truma tmeya, and maybe tell him that he has to take more truma on behalf of the stuff of tahar. No, we'll say that even that piece is not considered truma at all. It's considered regular tevel, like everything else. Rav Nosson, but Rabbi Yishai Amar loy asav loy klum atakenes hashirayim. No, what the Mishnah means is he didn't do anything, he didn't accomplish anything as far as the rest of the produce is still considered tevel. Aval truma hasn't, but this particular saw that he designated as truma, we will consider it truma. In other words, effectively what we're telling him is it's something that the Mishnah calls truma v'yachsav yitzrayim. It's considered truma, that one saw, but he's still going to have to take more truma to do the right thing.
But he won't have to take that piece of cement to put back.
No, he can't put it back to Tomei anyway. Okay. He doesn't want to make the rest of his stuff tar. But he can't give, in the sense he's going to have to give both, he's going to have to take another saw of the tar, and then he's going to have to give both of them to the Kayan. the truma for the kohen to use as firewood and the tahor for the kohen to eat. Effectively, that's what he has to do because he did b'meidin. But that's according to Rav Nathan Rav Oshia. According to Rav Chisda, no, all he has to do, he puts back that tummy one, he puts back wherever he got it. That it's still tevel. He's going to have to take truma from it later. Right, because he still has to take truma from tummy produce, yeah. But as far as his tahor produce, nothing happened. As far as his tahor produce, everybody agrees as far as the tahor produce, nothing happened at all. The question is, what happens with this one saw? Does he have to give it to the kohen, or can he put it back wherever he took it from and start all over again? That's what we're getting into. Rav Chista loy amach Rav Nassim Rav Oshia. So why Taka does Rav Chista not hold like Rav Nassim and say that we cancel him and we make him take another saw as truma but still give this first one to the kohen? Because he argues di amach have a truma, because if you're going to tell him that this first saw which is tamei is considered truma and you have to give it to the kohen zimnin the pasha v'lay mafrish, then he may get careless and not bother taking truma at all. Meaning exactly that. In other words, since he did it b'mezid, we're saying he did b'mezid. He took truma from tamei on tara b'mezid, which he knew he wasn't supposed to do. If we're going to try to cancel him and tell him, you know what, you have to give that tamei saw to the kohen as well as you have to take another tara saw, he's not going to bother, and then it's going to wind up he hasn't given truma properly. So that's the thing. If we tell him the first one you took, put it back and store it all over again, fine. At least he's saying, I'm only going to end up losing one saw to the kohen. Fine, I'm willing to do that. But he's not willing to lose two saw to the kohen, one tamei and one tahor.
He's not losing. He would have given tamei anyway.
But he's giving truma again from the tahor, but he only ends up giving one saw to the kohen, as opposed to before, he would have had to give two, according to the Nassim Rav Oshia, he's having to give him two saw, one tamei, one tahor. We're not talking really in terms of, I mean, a saw is a bushel, and it's, you know, in modern terms, it's about 20 pounds or so. But we're not using it as a specific measure, we're just giving an example. Yeah. It's not really one saw anyway. I mean, if you have 50 saw, then you're giving one as truma. Truma is supposed to be 1/50th or 1/40th if you're generous, 1/60th if you're miserly, whatever, anyway. Okay, the question is, Maishna Mahadatnan. So according to Rav Chisda, why is it different than the case, which Mishnah says also in Shrumas, Atorim Kishrus Vinimtis Mara, if a person takes as Truma Kishrus, which is a kind of cucumber, Nimtis Mara, and it turns out to be bitter, so it's inedible, or the one that he designated as Truma, or Avatiach, he sets aside a melon as Truma, Vinimtis Saruach, and it turns out to be spoiled. We say truma v'yachsav yitrin. That one that he gave is considered truma, but he has to take truma again.
It's not fit
to give it to the kohen, right? The question is, in that case, we're not worried that he's gonna say, you know what, I can't be bothered. I'm not gonna give truma at all. Why, in our case over here, the tamei and the tahor, is Rav Chisda worried about that? The answer is shogeg amazed karamis. How can you bring a contradiction from a case of shogeg and a case of mazid? The case of the cucumber or the melon, it was b'shogeg. We see that because the Mishnah is saying v'nimtzeis. It turned out that it was bitter or that it was spoiled or whatever. He didn't know at the time. How can you compare that with mazid? Shogeg le'ovad isora. In the case of a shogeg, he didn't actually mean to do an isur. So therefore, if we tell him, you know what, it turns out you did wrong. Okay, I made a mistake. I'll have to be more careful next time. Means he has to take another truma. I mean, so he has a pile of melons over there. He took one of them to give it as truma. It turns out it's spoiled. That one he still has to give to the kohen, let the kohen use it for firewood or whatever he can use a spoiled melon for. And then take another one as actual truma to give to the kohen. He's going to give both. And there Rav Chisda is not worried about it. He's going to say, forget about it. The difference is there he's shogeg. Shogeg like already sorted. The shogeg did not do something that was aser. So therefore, we're able to tell him, give more truma because this one was spoiled, and he'll pay attention, and he'll do it. Mazid called it isura, as opposed to the mazid actually already did an isur, so therefore we don't want to tell him to give truma again. He's not going to listen anyway. Okay, the Gemara points out, Rav Shogeg HaShogeg. In that case, then I can find a contradiction between Shogeg and Shogeg. Because we said in the Mishnah that we started the whole discussion, we said that if the person gave minatame alatar b'shogeg, we say truma say truma. The truma in the original Mishnah that we quoted, that we started this whole sugya, we said that if a person gives truma from Tomei on Tahar. He takes Tomei produce and gives it on behalf of Tahar produce, and it was B'shegig. We say Truma, say Truma. The Truma is Truma, meaning he does not have to do anything else. And yet, the Hasam Katani, Truma V'yachta V'yutrim. In the case of a spoiled melon, we say that he has to give Truma again. What's the difference?
They're both Shogig.
The answer is Hasam Shogig Karim Amazing. Because in the case of the spoiled cucumber, in the case of the spoiled cucumber, it is Shogig, but it's a Shogig that's close to Amazing. Because he should have tasted it first to realize, and he would have realized that it's spoiled. So the fact that he didn't. So 1 second. We're assuming that before he gives a melon as truma, he should be tasting it first to make sure that it's not spoiled. So if he didn't, then it's carelessness on his part, as opposed to tummy. And Torah, he may not realize the difference. It's not like you can look at it and know whether it's tummy. Now, the real question is not so much should we expect him to taste it, but how can he? It's tevel. You don't want to taste tevel. So maybe smell it, but we're talking about tasting it. So Tosfos gives one answer that what you should do is the particular melon, for example, that you plan to give as truma, take a little slice of it to designate that as truma on behalf of some part of the melon. Then you could taste some part of the melon now that you took off truma and maisa from it, make sure it's not spoiled, and then designate the rest of the melon as truma on behalf of everything else. You take a piece of the, you have a melon that weighs, you have a melon that weighs 10 pounds, let's say. So you cut out a slice of it, you cut out a small slice, you're saying, you know what, I'm cutting out a slice and I'm designating truma and maisa out of that slice on behalf of 1 pound of this melon. And then you can eat the rest of that pound. Make sure it's not spoiled.
Just
the rest of that 1 pound. The rest of that 1 pound. Yeah. Having done that, now you say, you know what, the remaining 9 pounds of this melon, now that I see it's not spoiled, I'm making the truma on behalf of the other 90 pounds of melons that I have over here.
And if it is spoiled, then
I'll know no good, and then I'll start all over. I'll start with another melon. The Tiferes Yisrael and Mishnayos gives a different answer. He mentions the idea of tasting it and spitting it out that you mentioned, but he said that's not so simple because we find you can do that maybe, we find there are certain cases where you can do it, but not in the matters of truma. But he says the difference is the whole concept of giving truma on vegetables, which melons and cucumbers are vegetables, is only the Rabbanan anyway. So therefore there's more room to be lenient that yes, maybe he should actually taste it and spit it out, or maybe or whatever, in order to make sure that's good. So if he doesn't, then it's a machlokas rishonim whether minatora truma only applies to grain, grapes and olives, or whether minatora it applies to all kinds of fruits. Machlokas rishonim. But everybody agrees that to vegetables it only applies to midrabanim.
Probably, one, you'll make a bracha on that. The other one
could be. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Amazing. How about then? I can find a contradiction between two cases. Amazing. Hachon katani amazing loy osiklum. In the case of the tomei ala tahor, we said that the amazing loy osiklum, which whatever we had the two, we had Rav Chista versus Rav Nassim. Whether that means at any rate, it means that the tahor produce has that the no truma has been taken on behalf of it yet. The question is only what happens to that tomei piece. Do you say that you put it back where you got it, or do you say you have to give it to the Kohen? Hasam Tznan, but yet we have a different Mishnah that says, Atoda Mishain Nokov on Bakuv. If a person takes truma from, he has two different crops. One of them grew in a flower pot that did not have a hole, which therefore, if it doesn't have a hole, then it's not considered attached to the ground at all. So therefore, we learned about it way back in Shabbos, yeah. So therefore, the produce that grows in it has no chiyuv of truma and maisis deraisa. Versus you have another batch that grew in a flower pot with a hole, where therefore it's able to get nourishment from the ground through the hole, and therefore it's considered as if it was planted in the ground. So one is chayuv deraisa, one is chayuv derabanan, in short. And we say if a person takes truma from grain, let's say, that grew in a flower pot without a hole, on grain that grew in one with a hole, Truma of the Yachsav Yitzra. And then we say that what he took is considered Truma, and he has to take Truma again from the flower pot with the hole. So there we see, even though it was bemazed, we're making him take...
For the non-hole?
He has two flower pots. One of them has a hole, the other one does not. He has grain growing in this one and grain growing in this one. What he did is, he took some of the grain from here, which is only Chayev, did Abanan, and used it as Truma on behalf of the grain in this one. So we're saying, what he took is considered truma. He does have to give it to the kohen. He's not allowed to eat it, etc. But he has to take truma again from the flower pot with the hole. So there we say truma v'yachsav yitzrim, whereas in the case of the tamei and the tahor, we don't. Why not? The answer is betray money tzayis, because the difference is he knows that they came from two different kinds of containers. If we tell him, you know what you took from the first container does not really count. You have to take from the other container. Okay, he'll understand that. He'll understand that it was two different circumstances. He's losing out, but he'll understand. B'chadman ha'loitzayis, but if it all came originally out of one container or one field or whatever, and just some of it becomes tamei, and we're telling him now, you know what, because it became tamei, therefore it's no good, he's not going to listen. He's not going to listen, and he's not going to understand. He's not going to listen, and therefore he won't undertake proper truma at all. Yeah, we're talking about the case of a mazid. But even a mazid, you know, he'll still listen to reason. We're not talking about a mummer, you know. Okay, so far that explains Rav Chista's. So far that explains Rav Chista's opinion. How about a law of nothing but a boshia? Da amalai also like kol masak and shayim aval truma havi. How about a point of nothing but a boshia, where he's saying that that in the case of tamei and tahor, effectively we are saying truma v'yachsav yitzrim, that what he took is considered truma, the tamei part is considered truma, and then he has to take truma again from the tahor. So meaning that what he took off is already considered truma. What's the difference from yet another Mishnah that we have where it's the other way around? If you have again the two flower pots, but here it's the other way around. Somebody took grain from the flower pot with the hole, which is Chayav D'Oraisa, and used it as Truma on behalf of the flower pot without a hole, which is only Chayav D'Rabbanan. And we say Truma se Truma, the Truma is considered Truma, but you're not allowed to eat that thing that's supposedly truma until you actually take out truma and maisa on it from someplace else, because not really truma, in other words. We only consider it truma insofar as the Zohar can't eat it, but the Kohen himself can't eat it until truma and maisa is taken off from it. So what's the difference? We're saying that what you took from the flower pot with the hole is not really considered truma, and therefore we have to make sure to give truma and maisa on it. As opposed to our case with the tamei and the tahor produce, where we're saying according to Rav Nosson Rav Oshia, it comes out that the first piece, the tamei piece, really is considered truma. No, not for the whole. It's two different things. We're saying a whole. We're saying the case of the whole versus the non-whole. What we're saying is it's not really considered truma. It's considered truma in the sense that you have to give it to the kohen, but it's not considered. But it itself is still considered tevel, and you have to take truma on it. As opposed to, in this case of the tamei and the tahor, we're saying that according to Rav Nosson Rav Oshia, the saw that you took off is considered full-fledged truma. You can't eat it because it's tamei, but you can't eat it because it's tamei, but it is considered full-fledged truma. Right. What's the difference? The answer is shiny hochad midaraisa, truma maliasi. The difference is because in the case of tamei and tahor, both of them are chayav daraisa, and in fact, midaraisa, that would be a valid way of giving truma. It's only the rabbanon that we're saying it's not. As opposed to the two flower pots, where the one without a hole is not chayav daraisa. Why? Kedura beloi. This that we're saying that mina torah you're allowed to give mina tamei ala tahor is according to what Rabbi Loi said. Do amar Rabbi Loi. How do we know that if a person takes off truma from bad produce on good produce, which also includes tamei and tahor, that it is considered good truma, meaning the thing has been accomplished, the other produce is considered is no longer tevel. How do we know? Because the pasuk says you won't bear guilt about it. When you take off the best from it, which means, in other words, effectively what the pasuk is saying is you should be giving the best as truma. If you didn't, then if you take off the best, then you're not bearing any guilt because you did the right thing. Which implies if you don't take off from the best, then you are bearing guilt. Now we have to ask the main kodesh, if what you take off is not considered truma anyway, why would you be bearing guilt? Why would it be considered a serious aveira? You didn't accomplish anything meaningful anyway. So therefore we see that, yes, it is considered truma. So you consider, the person who does that is considered, he's done something wrong, and he's noisichet.
But it's but truma is truma. We're talking amazing apparently. Now, Tosfos Yeshanim asks the question: why don't we say? What do you mean? What do you mean? Whether what he did is effective or not? Even if what he did is ineffective, and the Gemara has in Tmura at the beginning of Tmura, there's a whole machlokas Abaye and Rava that stretches over several pages there. It discusses the question: when the Torah says you're not allowed to do something, if you do it, is it considered? Have you accomplished something? Is it you've accomplished what you accomplished, but you did an aveda, or is it that the Torah makes it that you have not accomplished anything at all? I think I mentioned it, and it goes through cases. B'chol ha'tarta kula. Why don't we say over here, you haven't accomplished anything, it's not considered truma, but you've done an aveira. The answer is because you wouldn't use the expression on that, noisichet. If it was not considered kaddish at all, noisichet implies that you've done something which has a permanent effect. How does it have a permanent effect? Because this produce is permanently truma. As opposed to, if it wasn't considered truma, you couldn't call it nesius chet. You couldn't call it that you're bearing guilt, like as if like forever. You'd call it okay. You did an aveda, but you know it was a temporary thing. Anyway, so the point is that the point is that when it comes to tamei and tahor, so therefore it's all, the whole this that we're saying that it's not considered truma is only midrabanan. The tamei thing that you gave is considered truma. So therefore, according to Rav Nosson Ben Rabosha, it's considered truma. You do have to give it to the kohen because after all, midoraisa it is truma. Only midrabanan, we penalize you and make you take truma again. As opposed to according to Rav Chisda, we say I might agree with that, but we're not going to penalize him because he's not going to listen anyway. So we might as well leave well enough alone. Now, the question is, and this is how we're going to relate it back to our subject of here, Rabbi Mamzerim, Avalei Rabbi Lerav Chisda, L'di Doch Da'amet Lo Yosef Lo Klum Kol Iker, according to you, that you say that Lo Yosef Lo Klum, in the case of Tamar and the Torah, means that what he did is completely meaningless, Da'afilu Ahu Griva Hadu L'Tivle, which means we said that even that saw, that one saw, which was Tamar, which you declared as Truma, is not considered Truma at all, it's considered 100% Tevel. The question is, and we say, my time of Zera Dimel Pasha Vilei Mafish, why are we saying that? Because otherwise, if you force him to give both Sim to the Kayan, he's going to get careless and not do it at all. The problem with that is, Mi Ika Midi Dimida Raisa Habit Truma, how could you have a case? Mimida Raisa, we just said, according to Rabbi Eloi, that this would be considered Truma. Umishum Dimel Pasha Abkur Rabbanon Lacholin, but the Rabbanon are saying, because he might be careless, we're going to revert it back to Cholin. How can he do that? Vachid based in Masnin Lako government Atarda. The base didn't have the right to uproot something that the Torah says. If the Torah says this is truma, how can the Rabbanim say it's cholim?
Rather, what he's trying to do. Yeah. Not
in matters of his sorting, yeah. Amalei said, if Chist answers him, no, what's the problem? But ask like this, why? Don't you think that Rabbanim, in fact, have the right to do that? But we have in our Mishnah, this is how all this relates back to our Mishnah, have lad mamza mizeh umzeh, that we said this woman who thought her first husband was dead and remarried, and now her first husband shows up, we say that whether she has a child with the first one or the second one, he's considered a mamzer. And we have to consider, bishleim mishani mamzer. I understand a child from the second husband is a mamzer because she's still married to her first husband, she's mizana. Elamad rishon amai, but why would he say that a child from the first husband is a mamzer? Ishtahi. She's still his wife, Yisrael Mal Yehu. So Minatoda, this child would be considered a perfectly kosher Jew. A kosher in like Mamzerus. What are you saying? The Mishnah is saying that you consider him a Mamzer, which means that now you're allowing him to marry a Mamzerus. So there you see that Abonon have the right to take a person who Minatoda is considered a kosher person and is also to marry a Mamzerus, and you're saying he's a Mamzer and therefore is allowed to marry a Mamzerus. So yes, you see that Abonon have the right to do that. So by the same token, yes, they can take the Truma and declare it Kolon.
We said
unlike Rav Nosson Ben Rabosha, who said the first one is considered truma, but you have to take truma again. We're gonna penalize you. Rav Chisda is saying don't penalize him because he's not gonna listen anyway. Just consider that first one to go back to being chulin, and let him start all over again. That is the question. How does the Rabbanon have the right to take truma and make it chulin? And we're saying the same way as the Rabbanon have the right to take a kosher and make him a mamzer.
It's not the same as in, I think, kosher.
No, because because the kula, we're saying he's allowed to marry a mamzeres. Where minatori he would not be allowed to. Minatori he'd get malchus for marrying a mamzeres. And now we're saying he's allowed to. Amalei. So Rabbah tells him no, because it, as a matter of fact, that's not a proof, because Hachi Amar Shmuel also b'mamzeres. Because Shmuel said, when we say have lot mamzer mizeh umizeh, we don't mean that the child for the first husband is considered a mamzer min atoda in the sense that he'd be allowed to marry a mamzeres. He's considered a mamzer min rabbanon only. He's still also to marry a mamzeres. So here you want to tell me that the saw becomes complete chulin again, which would be midaraisa, but you're undoing the thing midaraisa. Whereas here, you're talking not. You're saying that he's not allowed to marry a regular bas yisrael because midrabanan is considered a mamzer, but he also can't marry a mamzeres because midaraisa, he's a kosher. Who will he be able to marry? A geyeres. Or shivchum or shukraris.
A person like him.
Or a person like him, the chen ki also Ravin Amar Rabbi Yechanan also b'mamzeres. So also when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he reported that Rabbi Yechanan also said that this child is also b'mamzeres. Mamzer le Rabbanan. Yeah. So in what sense are we considering him a mamzer? We just mean that he's also to marry a regular Bas Yisrael. So you're still back to the question then. How in the case of the Truma are the Rabbanan able to turn Truma into Chulin? Because
that's
over here, all we're saying is we're not going to allow him to marry somebody he would have been allowed to marry Deraisa, but we're also not allowed. We're not allowing him either to marry somebody he'd be also to marry Deraisa. He can't marry a mamzeres. Yeah.
What does he do wrong? The child was born the
What does anybody who's a mamzer do wrong?
Making a cut because of what she did later on.
Because it should have been Isha Daiko Mintzava, because she should have been more careful before remarrying. Therefore, one of the penalties is that it affects her children.
Okay.
Shalach ben Rav Chista l'Rava b'yad Rav Acha b'Rav Huna. So Rav Chista sent a message to Rava, apparently sometime after the previous discussion Rava had left, but Rav Chista still wanted to continue the discussion. So he sent a message b'yad Rav Acha b'Rav Huna, in the hand of Rav Acha b'Rav Huna. He asked him, "Ain based in Masnin Lach or government Atzeira? You're telling me that the Rabbanan never have a right to make a takana that uproots something in Atzeira? But Hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Me'emasai Adam Yodesh Tishtek Tana. From what point on can a man inherit from his wife who's a Tana when she dies?" Now we're talking about the kind of case where we, as we learned a few times in the Masechta already, and as we're going to learn later on, where she would have been able to do miyun, where she was not niskadish by her father, where then the kedushin are effective in Torah. She was niskadish by her brothers or her mother or whatever, by relatives, and therefore the kedushin are only in effect in the drabbanon. And if she wants, as long as she's below bas mitzvah, she can do miyun. She can make a declaration, "I don't want to be married to this man anymore," and then the marriage is over. So at what point do we say that he's allowed to inherit from her, that her husband is allowed to inherit from her, and we're not worried about the possibility of miyun? That not the possibility of miyun. I mean, she's dead, but the possibility that she would have been the mine. Beit Shammai and Mishatamad became Masa. So Beit Shammai says only when she becomes a gdola, when she literally Mishatamad became Masa, means when she reaches her full height, not her full height, but in other words, when she becomes a naira, when she has shtei sairas, when she starts developing puberty. Or Vesilah and Mishatkanis lechupa, whereas Vesilah says when she goes into the chupa. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a Mishiki boy. Rabbi Eliezer says only from when she actually has relations. The Yosho Mutamila, and at that point he can Yarshin for her, and if he's a Koyan, he can become Tomei for her, because at that point, once they had relations, then the Kedushin are Chal Medar Isa. Va'echelus beginei Truma, and she's allowed to eat Truma on his behalf, if he's a Koyan. So, Beit Shammai Omer Mishatamad became Masa Afagav Delo Nichnas Lechupa. So that was the Braisa. So now let's analyze it. Beit Shammai Omer Mishatamad became Masa. So Beit Shammai is saying that once she reaches puberty, then already he can yarshin her what Afagav Delo Nichnas Lechupa, even if they never did chupa. We learned before that even forget about a katana, even if a person does kedushin with an older woman. As long as they haven't done nisuin, he doesn't yarshin her, he can't be matame for her, they're not considered man and wife for most purposes. So how can you say, as soon as she becomes a gdola, then already he can yarshin her, they still need chuppah. Ema, so you're right, you have to correct the braisa. What Beit Shammai means, mishtamet b'kemosa zitikonis l'chuppah. It means she has to grow up as well as there has to have been chuppah. So the Shammai says to Basil as follows, you're saying once she goes into the chuppah, that's good enough for him to yarshin her. That's not enough. Only if she's reached puberty is the chuppah effective. If not, then the chuppah doesn't help, because the kedushin themselves will only the rabbanon. And then the Braisa continues.
She's married, but she's not married.
Right. She's not married with Midaraisa, yeah. And Rabbi Yezza, we said Rabbi Yezza says that he can yashin her once they had relations. The question is, doesn't Rabbi Yezza say that the actions of a ktana are not considered anything? So what if she had relations? She's still a ktana. So it's not considered a full-fledged marriage.
She knows about that.
Ema, Mishatagil, Vashitibal. Okay, you have to correct Rabbi Eliezer also and say that it means once she reaches puberty and she's had relations, then already the marriage is fully taken effect. That's not the same, no, because the Shammai is saying once she goes into the chuppah is not necessarily Be'ilah yet, the chuppah is Yichud. Rabbi Eliezer is saying they actually have had relations. Now, what's the relevance of this? Katani Mies Yosha. So we're saying over here that, at any rate, that there comes a point when he yarshins her based on the original thing, based on the original kedushin, which were only effective d'rabbanan. And according to Basilul, all you need is chuppah, even though she's still a tana, even though the whole thing is still only d'rabbanan. The midaraisa avur yarisla. So midaraisa, her father would be the one to yarshin her, or not her father. Her father really is dead already at this point, but. Actually, it doesn't have to be. Remember, we learned earlier in the Masechta. We learned when we talked about the case of Miun, we learned that there can be a case called Ktana with Yisayim of Chayavia, that she's still considered, while her father is alive, she's already considered an orphan. Namely, she was married once, divorced. Now her father has no right to remarry her off again. So now, at this point, her second marriage is only the Rabbanan. But her father is still alive and can yarshin her. Or fine, if her father's not alive anymore, the normal case of a Yisayim, then her brothers would be yashining or whoever. Midrabanan yoris labal. And yet we're saying that midrabanan, the husband, yashins her. So we see that the rabbanan have the right to overturn something deraisa.
The brothers should have been
there. The deraisa, the father, his brothers, whatever, her original, her birth family should be yashining her. Midrabanan, we're saying her husband does. So you see that so Rav Chista is saying to Rabba, you're telling me that Rabbanan have no right to overturn something that Raisa, here is a perfect case where they do. So what? It's still under Rabbanan.
Yeah, but it's only if she doesn't do me, she's going to be
derisive. Eventually it'll be derisive, but right now she died still a Tana. And we're saying her husband has a right to yashin her. Why? The answer is hefker based in hefker. Now it says in our Gemara it says hefker based in hoya hefker. That's something the censors changed. The censors didn't like the idea. Hayitochen based in should have the rights over dine momenus. The tsars in particular were very against that kind of thing. So they added the word hoya. That based in at one time had this power, but we know that's not what it means. It means based in has the power to declare money hefker. So yes, when it comes to financial matters, they have that right. How do we know that Beis Din has the right to declare things hefker? Shenemar, Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how Ezra came with his group to Yerushalayim, as we learned the other day with the missing Levim. And then they told him there's a huge problem of intermarriage. There are Jews intermarrying with Goyish women. So Ezra made a whole to-do over it. And they made an announcement. Everybody has to gather in Yerushalayim in 3 days. Anybody who does not show up in 3 days, according to the advice of the Sorim, meaning the Sanhedrin and the Skenim, all of his property will be declared forfeit. Meaning Hefka Bastin. And he will be separated from the congregation, meaning he'll be put in the Kherim.
Why? What was
it? So the people were intermarrying. So Ezra and the Skenim ordered that everybody should gather there in 3 days' time in order to tell the people, you know, you got to do something about this. We got to stop this.
Intermarrying between what?
Between Jews and Goyim. What does intermarrying mean? And sure enough, everybody showed up, and the upshot is they ended up setting up. But they set up. The people said, you know what? We can't do this all at once. Set up Bate Dinim. Let's figure out whose wife is takapostle to him and who's his kasha, who went through a valid gayrus and who didn't. What do we do as far as the children? And they did. But we see from that that Hefka based in Hefka, because they were threatening that anybody who doesn't show up, their property is going to be confiscated. Altogether, the pasuk mentions, I think, 113 names of people who were intermarried. It was out of 40,000 people or so, but still, you know, it's So right, in absolute numbers, it wasn't that much, but still, there was enough for it to be a problem. Rebbe Loza says, I have a different pasuk that expresses this idea. The pasuk says, Ela hanecholos hashenichlo Loza akarin v'yashur b'nun, v'roshay ha'avayt l'matit b'nei Yisrael. After the pasuk describes the boundaries of all the 12 shvatim, and it sums up, these are the inheritances which are Loza akarin and v'yashur b'nun, and the heads of the fathers of their shvatim of b'nei Yisrael, made everybody inherit. Hashenichlo, they made them inherit. Now, why is it describing them as Roshay Ha'ovis, the heads of the fathers? Just like fathers can bequeath to their children whatever they want. So also, the heads of the Shvatim can bequeath, can make inherit the people whatever they want. Meaning, and if they don't want to, then not. So therefore, we also see the Hefker based in Hefker, that the Roshay Ha'ovis, in other words, have the right to expropriate property. So we're back to there's no proof. There's no proof. You don't really have a case necessarily where you're going to say that the Rabbanon have the right to overturn something like in the matter of Truma, to overturn something deraisa, to say that the produce was Truma deraisa, but they're going to say it's Kolam de Rabbanon. We don't seem to have that yet. We disprove the case from our Mishnah, and we said in the case of the inheritance, that's different. That's Dine Mominus. The Rabbanon have more latitude there. But as long as he leaves over some of the inheritance for his children, he's allowed to bequeath the rest of it as gifts to whoever he wants. Yeah, before he dies, but yeah, that's the point. Okay, how about another thing? How about midaraisa? We would say this girl is not considered married. So if her father is a kohen, then her father is the one who has the mitzvah to become tummy for her. Midrabanan, though, we're saying her husband, assuming her husband is a kohen, is the tummy for her. So there you have, again, the Rabbanan overturning something midaraisa. Midaraisa, this man has no relation with this woman. He shouldn't be mitami to her. But midrabanan, we're saying he does. The answer is mishum dehavilam mes mitzvah. Because that's different. Because we consider this girl to be a mes mitzvah, like a body where nobody else is available to bury it. As a matter of fact, the Rambam actually writes that the Torah does not actually say in so many words that a husband is metame for his wife. The expression is in the Torah, kiim l'she'erei akorav elav, that a person can be metame, a kohen can be metame for his close relatives, and then it starts listing relatives, la'aviv, la'ima, la'achol, la'achoyse, etc. It doesn't say anything about a wife explicitly. We learn that she'erei zu ishtei, that the word she'erei means his wife. The Rambam has an interesting take on that, based on our Gemara over here. That actually, every case where a kohen is metame for his wife, it's not that the Torah explicitly says he can be metame for his wife. His wife is considered a mes mitzvah. Nobody else is going to be available to bury her for reasons that the Gemara is going to say in a second. So therefore, she'd be considered a mes mitzvah. So we're applying the same case over here. This girl would be considered a mes mitzvah. Yes, midaraisa, we would say that she's not considered married to him, but midaraisa, she's considered a mes mitzvah because nobody else is available to bury her. So therefore, we allow the husband to on that basis, not because of the marriage, but because of mes mitzvah.
But we know the fact there are people
around here. Right. The question is, when we have a mes mitzvah, how could you consider her a mes mitzvah? V'atanya, ezehu mes mitzvah. What is the definition of a mes mitzvah? Kol she'en le'kavrin. Anybody who, there's nobody available to bury him. And kore v'acherim o'inoisa, ezehu the mes mitzvah. If you find a body laying on the street, and you call out and other people answer, then it's not a mes mitzvah because there are other people available. Instead of you, the kohen, becoming tamei and burying it, leave it to them. So over here, like you say, there's many other people around. She has a whole family. Why is she considered a mes mitzvah? The answer is hochanami, kivin de lo yarsi la kari of lo onola. Because in this case, the family doesn't inherit her. So effectively, therefore, the husband might be calling out for help with burying her and know that they were not going to listen. So therefore, we consider her a mes mitzvah. And as I say, the Rambam applies that more generally to a woman, that she would be considered a mes mitzvah because her husband is the primary one who would have to be involved in her funeral. You can't expect necessarily that her family is going to be.
Because the family doesn't inherit, so they will abandon her?
We don't know for sure, but there's at least that possibility. Yeah. And one more thing, just V'chelos beginning truma. What about the fact the Mishnah had said, the Braisa rather had said that this Katana who's married to this Kohen is allowed to eat truma because of him? Again, Midaraisa, remember she's a Bas Yisrael. Midaraisa, she shouldn't be eating truma, only Midrabanan. So again, we see that the Rabbanon have the right to do something that even against Midaraisa.
How do we use the Lashon Begine?
Begine means because of him. The answer is Truma de Rabbanon. You're right. When we say that she can eat Truma, would only mean Truma de Rabbanon. For example, Truma of vegetables that we were talking about before. You're right. As long as she is a Ketana, she will not be, as long as she's a Ketana, and Chuppah has not happened, etc., she will not be allowed to eat Truma de Araisa. So we're still back to the Rabbanon do not have the right to make a Ketana that's going to override something de Araisa. So we'll continue tomorrow, Baz Hashem, but we still have to continue this discussion. Do we ever find a case where the Rabbanon have the right to override something that arises? Yeah.